parents, and then we all killed together for the what play. I must have gotten choked up 10 times because of that, because their little children, and they read the creed, all study of Torah is prohibited. You cannot fulfill mitzvahs anymore. And then, of course, a little child saying, of course, by the stone, we're going to fight them to the very end. I saw the parents who had tears coming down their eyes. A little boy, 9 years old, came over to me, and I think that melted me away more than anything else. A very beautiful Hebrew. He looked out to me and said, I said, yes. I said, I'm going to have a dead children. 9 years old, just as old, waiting with absolute bated breath, when will they ever make it through to summer? What would I say to a parent who walked up to me and said, can we do it? Do you think my grandchildren will see theirs as well? Obviously, my task was to encourage. But since then, now the situation in Russia is the worst that it has been in many years. They described it as he jumped because of the most. Of course, because of the struggle that is going on now between East and West, the basic renewal of the Cold War between the United States and Russia, the ones who are caught in the middle, the ones who, in a sense, are the Bnei Akiva, the hostages, are so good. When the relationship between America and Russia is good, it gets beneficial. When the relationship between America and Russia is bad, Jews suffer. But they also are sophisticated enough to understand one another. They know that at the center of the world is also the relationship between the United States and Eretz Yisrael. They have no complaint. They understand that Eretz Yisrael must be defense of Eretz Yisrael. And the struggle, as I said, is the struggle that is not merely Yerushalayim and Moscow. Moscow now has Syria that is its agent at the very borders of Eretz Yisrael. So that was the Talmud Torah. I say again, I was profoundly, profoundly comforted. I found in the serious nefesh there for the study of Torah and Kiyum and Mitzvahs, and they are didactic in Mitzvahs and Kalam to Kabura. They are studying Torah in the most awful conditions, and they are studying Torah and they are studying that. We have no idea the way in which they're studying. I think it was Monday night, or sixth night of Hanukkah. I was in a house at which I was not in the same room, the search room, or Sunday night, or a good part of Monday night. And there were 10 Jews amongst them, 10 or 12 more burning. And they said they were waiting for someone to come and to show them how to make a seal on itself. That was very difficult. One of them lived in companies, the other made a thing. Late 20s. Both of them have begun to learn in our days, 4 years ago. 4 years ago. One of them made a seal, he didn't set this up at home. The other made a seal and set it up. I think they knew some heaven and purpose from beginning to end, ended every part. Because there is so much suffering involved in their study of Torah, every bit of Torah that they learn is so important to them. It's so precious. Just as we just learn and forget, they have to learn before they come. That was the most humbling experience of all. We can learn about, learn. It doesn't come to the context of learning that we have to learn. In 4 years, we have gone from our days to the completion of the Sabbath to something that is a very deep And under what condition? Under what condition? These are people who most are scientists, mathematicians, who are not working as scientists and mathematicians anymore. They're working as night watchmen or as orderlies in the hospital. When do they find the time to start playing? But it has become so painful. This is their major means of identifying themselves as Jews, and therefore they convince that as they are Rafa. We never sat down for people to bring my life. When do we bring my life? It's the great rara of a Shabbos or a Yantavir. Whatever halacha they learn, that's it. That's the deal. That's the halacha. And finish. There are only two ways of that. Whatever halacha is that you can imagine. I'll tell you another thing. Aside from the fact that everything they learn becomes a pianola, that has to look Friday night, a 16-year-old daughter. My friend had been saying something, and she quoted a Mishnah. Trivialis. Just look. Exactly what? Mishnah Trivialis. We were amazed. This is not Mishnah. What about Mishnah? This is not the word. She said the first thing she learned was Trivialis. That's because he. The mother said, Trivialis is hers. It belongs to her. She knows it from the portion from beginning to end. 16-year-old girl who is already 15 mothers. The value of a safe. I don't know if that comes to that goal. There have been a number of times that I made forays down to the of the this is any place, but I don't know why that thought came to my mind. She was not of it. There are girls who left over Hawaii, Israelis, you name it, from Macau, Kwakshin, who knows what, does like them. I didn't see a Sefer if it does like them. Every Sefer is special. I saw it, since somebody must have tied it up in the old college Sefer of the Dharma according to the monks, the rule of the monks. I saw it this way. I don't think I see a more dog eared copy. And well over the side, translations into Russian, every sefer is an absolute pizza. Every sefer is a treasure. But one of the things I brought to this moment, instead of the message that's gone who knows how many thousands of miles, that in the house they wanted. The Pinchas in July 6th. Maybe not the Pinchas in July, the big fat one I called the Desert Island Sitter. That's the Sitter I was on with me. When I came in Friday night before darkness, and I came in the Pinchas in July 6th, you couldn't fly the look on her face. There were so many things, number one, for recognition. Somebody had been there and remembered and brought the message that his house would like to have a little bit of a wine sitting. A certain fact that there was that tremendous feeling that she already had, she finally got the little bit of a wine sitting. It was worth everything giving her that sitting. We take a lot for granted. That's one of the things that I love. That was another one of the things that. Just screaming. taken with another name. The hell of Frankfurt, Berlin, Germany, that ended. The hell of Moscow was also the Moscow. Most moving experience. I've said that before. What is the problem with Islam? Because this is going to happen dozens of times. Come to our house, knock on the door, the door is open, somebody looks out, and a crack in the door. They take a look, and you feel the side of the shovel. People start to shovel. Door is open immediately into the house. In saying shalom, they friendships were paid in the free world. Till friendships develop between people. One has to live a thousand lifetimes for friendships to develop. Friendships did develop within a matter of minutes. There are people that we met during the course of those 2 weeks that I feel I've known them for a lifetime. And it took no more than minutes. The fact that you're Jewish, it was enough. You were a Jew coming from outside Russia just to say hello. The greatest friendship in the world. I'm telling you, people share whatever little they have with us. And I begin to think sometimes the differences that divide us are so common. Preceded us, because there is an ongoing connection between the free world and Russia, the way they spoke about those who came before, so they knew they had known them for years. That's the way we felt it was. The word was shalom, that's it. Even in a train station, subway, somebody met you, the only matter of recognition was shalom. Whisper Shalom. It reminded me of the prophet. What was it that they said in others? Ki pi hametaber aleihem. Rashi then says, what was it that Yosef told his brother? Rashi Hakamesh. Now you can be sure that I am your brother. I speak Rashi Hakamesh. And another extremely significant phenomenon that sheds light on that puzzle is the fact that the ballet tshuva in Russia are nearly exclusively the products of the Yiddish movement. There is a movement of studying Yiddish, Jewish culture, Hebrew. But that movement of Hebrew has given birth to nearly every one of the young ballet tshuva. And it's amazing. One after another, the Hebrew groups are the ones that created the groups studied.
We met with both of our groups, all sorts of groups, those who were studying Torah, those who were studying Kiddush, those that just wanted to hear about Eretz Yisrael. Going to one of those meetings, I had a shock of my life. I wasn't like I'm waiting for somebody at Karon Kishon. Tall fellow, standing near a column in the subway.
There's a sitting in the tent. Who's your?
I just don't think it's up.
And you don't see people who are traveling in Moscow, in the suburb.
I was so curious, who is this fellow? Help for the baby shalom.
That night, at the end, toward the end of the meeting, in a particular home in Moscow, the door opens up, and this fellow walks in. I went up and I said,
Weren't you babbling this morning in the metro?
Sure I was.
Why did you do it?
Why did you do this today? It's an open door. I didn't have time to say hello. Listen, I didn't have time to say hello. And I didn't say hello. And I don't refuse. It was kind of door solid.
You said you didn't care. You had to say hello.
You said hello. You wonder what has to go next. You're not an act of that sort. Of that sort. Before you have the guts to put chronic attendance, you know, and when you saw the most unusual array of notes for chronic attendance, you begin by rushing. Now everybody is working to get along. And perhaps the house is most different. I think you're the first one to go to the whole time of the other. You can be led to different cities and different homes. Another one, I'll pay the truth. I have a feeling it was unnecessary for us to bring the company up. Here's what we can have involved in the computer business. But we can see the care that we're going to make in the future of our company. How about that? That act of economy campus, you know, it may be acceptable here. It may be very acceptable in the United States of America. We don't make one to do it because but in Soviet Russia, that's the serious how they're not afraid, I don't know, maybe they feel they have nothing else to lose. Maybe what they really feel is their Jewish identity. What if these kind of candles in the window? Because that's what the Schopenhauer says, and they're going to do the promise of building. That's the last one went to Leningrad. Leningrad was basically a repeat of Moscow except on a small scale. While there are hundreds studying Torah in Moscow, one can only say that there are dozens who are studying Torah in Leningrad. Spent on a snowy Friday night, 6 hours with a family in Leningrad. Again, a Shabbos table, guests, warm, beautiful, moving. Riga was the last stop. In Riga, a number of bits of information that we had to bring out here. We saw a few of the more of the Soviet Russia before that. The Riga Jewish community, and this was one of the very impressive things, one looks at a map of Russia and Ukraine, and for that matter, all of the East European countries, all the cities, they're dotted with cities that were once jewels in the crown of Kharkiv. Cities that gave out tremendous Gedolei Yisrael, great Hasidic letters. Jewish community was 1,000 years of Jewish life in Europe. That's gone. Kishinev. There's no Jew studying Torah in Kishinev. Shitana, Kharkov, Barnavich, Vilna. We're talking about cities that were once the pair of Jewish life. One Jew studying Torah, one man studying Torah. That's what has become. Riga too was once a tremendous Jewish community. Riga, outside of Riga, there is a place called Salus Hills, which was a concentration camp. And immediately outside the city, there's a place called Grumbala. Grumbala may be unknown. Grumbala was the Davi Yara of Riga. Babi Yar of Kiev, 135,000 Jews were shot dead by Germans in 36 hours. The blood coming up from the ground for weeks afterwards. Outside of Riga, Grumbala, once they thought that no more than 40,000 Jews were shot by the Germans. There's recent evidence in the Odin archives that close to 200,000 Jews were slaughtered. 2 days, which is November 30th, December 8th. There's a massive monument at Grumbala. The people of all nations died here. Even in the agony of death, the Soviet government will not acknowledge the fact that it was the Jews who were killed. It has become the minute in Riga that on Sunday between November 30th and December 8th, this year was Sunday of Hanukkah,
children's brother who are not smothered at that time. They say, Philip, here what is happening, make speeches this year that was about 2 weeks ago, and they arrived at Bumrah, the prime management, the whole area was surrounded by militia in a suburb. And yes, Lord Jim decided he's going to the lines and he's going to speak. First do that will, the president needed to be on the spot by taking it. Did that stop the second one? No. The second one went through and spoke. With our best. Third went through and spoke. The fourth went through, said Kaddish. The fifth went through the lines, said again all about. They made it absolutely clear that they come for a purpose and they were going to accomplish that purpose. They planned a, for the first time, they rented a hall, rented a hall for a Hanukkah party, and poured 70 pounds of, 70 kilos of plates, and I spoke to a brave, young, heroic woman, and the morning of the party, and they said, this place is condemned. It's very dangerous. You can't hold any damage. So they had to remove everything. They stopped that. They divided the people in two. On the fifth night of Hanukkah, 100 people got into an apartment to celebrate Hanukkah. And then on the following night, another 50 people. It's fascinating. There are three important subjects. Chronic and Purim, Chronic and Purim, and one other, Sintas Torah. Sintas Torah has become the center of all activity. I sat with a Jew in Leningrad. In Leningrad, there were 5,000 young people in front of the shul on Sintas Torah, and he had the nerve. I saw somebody had taken a picture of it. They had their hand on the picture. He raised a sign in front of the shul. Anyone interested in learning Hebrew, get in touch with this number. And there were hundreds of students who got in touch. And then the first issue that was incorporated by the Empire was one of the greatest empires the world ever knew. Yehuda, Judea, Israel, Palestina was the smallest of the provinces of the Roman Empire. But Sisera said that Judea rebels, the Roman Empire was. A few Jews may have a few stunning, and the Soviet Empire quits. They're fighting them. There's something about anything written in Hebrew or something that's Jewish, that empire is that's one. Two things happen on the last day. I return to the home of this woman who I did the one who spent 7 hours that night, that first Friday night. And in the house, wanted to say goodbye to her, fight for us to eat. That was one. We got word that the power of the person who was going to be coming that day, late that day, just when his wife was going to be coming to the house, so to get a certain thing to take in. And those would be unloaded, all of the food that we had left for the following day and a half. She is so cute. Only they could get this in place with her, which their opinion was to be put into the jails and walked out from Moscow. And this woman, fully like she asked about very maturity, how they live, what's going on in America, when she made a statement that I don't know whether we were fully able to do this.
Taking photos behind me, I feel very much like I'm in Russia. There were tons of questions. There were many tape recorders in the open, and there were a great deal of tape recorders that we didn't know about. Let me say the following. I'm not usually terribly apprehensive when I have to speak publicly. However, this is one time when I do sense deeply apprehension. I'll tell you why. The experience was a profoundly moving one. I believe that there is an achrayus, a responsibility on anybody who goes to Russia to attempt in some way to transmit some part of that experience. However, it's the kind of experience that I'm afraid words will never be sufficient in order to paint the picture. So that I stand up here to speak this evening, knowing what I want to do, being very apprehensive that I will not be able to succeed because I don't think that success is possible. It's near impossible to transport all of you into a completely different world. To be even more correct about it, it would be necessary for me to transport you into a completely different planet. It's difficult to believe that Russia and the free world both inhabit the very same Earth. It's two different worlds. You've never experienced it. You've never lived through it. You've never been there. It's so, so difficult to tell you that it's a completely different world. Whatever it is that we sense and we feel here, those feelings don't exist there. We don't know the meaning of freedom. We don't know the meaning of freedom until we've been there and back. I'm apprehensive also because, listen, as I'm sure many of you have been, I have for many years been active on behalf of Soviet Jewry. I marched on Solidarity Sunday together with the other 150 or 200,000 along Fifth Avenue to Dag Hammarskjöld Square or down to Battery Park. I demonstrated, I attended meetings, I wrote letters, I delivered sermons, but I'll tell you, all of my activity on behalf of Soviet Jewry all of these years, all of it didn't prepare me for the profound emotional experience of coming face to face with the agony and the suffering of Achim B'nai Yisrael, and at the same time coming face to face with their heroism and their bravery. I'm also apprehensive because I feel it's terribly important to in some way give you a little bit of that feeling. I was always concerned, as I'm sure there were others before me, the question has often been asked by youth to their elders, where were you during the Shoah? What did you do? What did you know? Did life continue on in New York, Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, as it had always been? Did the fact that millions of Jews were being taken to their deaths, did it make a difference in the daily lives, or didn't it? It's a horrible, horrible question. And I never wanted that my grandchildren should turn to me someday and say, well, 3 million Jews in the Soviet Union, what did you do? Did you know? Did you care? Did you respond in any way? So therefore, if in some little way I would be able to transmit some of the feelings, I believe that that's the very least I owe to all the people that I met during the course of those 2 weeks. At least that much. Let Jews outside of Russia know, and even if for one brief moment, sense the pain of slavery, oppression, repression, fear, constant anxiety. For a moment, you just feel that then, for one moment, it will open. To put the matter in historical perspective, and we have to look at it, Jews are an eternal people, and this is not the first struggle against a Jewish community. In every generation, there's been a struggle between Yerushalayim and the world. Never by our own choice, but by their choice. At one point in history, it was Yerushalayim and Bavel. At another point in history, and maybe that continues even until today, two extreme opposite poles, Yerushalayim and Rome. Well, earlier in this century, the two poles, the two extremes, the two opposites, the two that were locked in absolute mortal combat were Yerushalayim and Berlin. Today, the struggle is, it's a world struggle, but in that struggle between East and West, the fact is, the battle is between Yerushalayim and Moscow. The center of global anti-Semitism is Moscow. The center of world terrorism, Moscow. the export of all sorts of means of terror and weapons to be used against Kleinstein and the world is Moscow. It is the center, the nerve center of all Sinovsky scholar, and it's getting worse every day. I saw very recently published books published by the government. I tried to publish the most rabid anti-Semitism you can imagine. There is a constant machinery of one of the great superpowers of history spewing forth hatred to Klal Yisrael and to Torah system. The basic approach of Moscow today is that Zionism is racism. And make no mistake, Zionism is not a political term as far as they are concerned. Zionism is just another name for Christ. Jews, wherever they may be. That Torah is reactionary, that Torah is a threat to the world, this is a message that comes from Moscow. That Jewish culture and anything Jewish is hateful and an abomination, that is being signaled from Moscow all over the world. Anyone who embraces the ideals of Zionism, of Torah, or the study of Lashon HaKodesh is liable to punishment, the worst of all. Prison, exile, from the Kremlin. There was a moment that I sensed hatred standing in front of the Kremlin. From the Kremlin has gone forth the imperative that any kind of international grouping is kosher, except for the bond that joins Jewish communities and Jews together the world over. Soviet Russia has made it clear that Sinas Yisrael is an integral part of the education both of the masses and of the armed forces. Moscow maintains that a Jew may not leave the boundaries of the Soviet Union, but he also may not remain within and live as a Jew. A Jew cannot seek a homeland from without, yet he is denied a homeland from within. As far as Soviet Russia is concerned, the Jew is a tragic mistake of history. Not part of any nationality, and neither is the Jew a nationality apart. Only a totalitarian, dictatorial regime that is oppressive, that is fueled by ugly hatred, can maintain anything Jewish is hateful, and they are therefore singled out for the worst kind of suffering under the heel of absolute brutal repression. What kind of repression? Jews are being punished today in the Soviet Union for the crime of parasitism. What does that mean? The Jew who applies for Aliyah knows that very soon afterwards, he will be dismissed from his place of work. Being dismissed from his place of work, he's left without any physical means of support, and is therefore condemned as a parasite. Jews, they claim, do not contribute to society. They claim that Jews are behind all anti-Soviet propaganda. Why? Because they have declared that Russia is not their motherland. Jews are accused of being traitors because they have said, merely because they have said, that they owe allegiance to another land, Eretz Yisrael. Jews, the world over, we have never sought to deny Russia its legitimacy as a state, as a power, as a government. But Russia has done precisely that to Jews. Deny them their rights, denied them their right to live in peace, denied them their right to live as Jews, denied them the right to be united with their own. Well, that is by way of introduction, so that we know what we are dealing with. We know that we are dealing with the great struggle today, Yerushalayim as Moscow. The next thing that one must be able to transmit, and I say I can only try, the fear that pervades that society. The only way I can describe it, it was something that I saw for a number of days, the days that I was in Moscow. The way to travel to Moscow is by the metro, the underground, the subway. Certainly the most efficient in the world, certainly the cleanest in the world. Subways are built very deep down into the ground. Going down and going up is by escalator. Just imagine the scene. It's rush hour. There are most probably tens of thousands of people going down and going up. Not a word, not a sound. Nobody speaks to anybody else. Jack, I saw it. I watched it day after day. Not a word. No, not a word. Not a smile. Not a smile. Thousands of people. Down, up, down, up, not a word. Absolute silence. People hurrying through the subways, not a word. I didn't saw anything of the sort in my life. In the subways and in the trains, nobody talks to anybody else. I can't see. 7 days I spent back and forth along that subway. Subway was the main means of transportation. And it was the main means of meeting people. There were always one would make a call to a particular number. Oh, be at such and such subway stop, Karan Rishon, first car. Instead of our first car, a minute or two, somebody would walk over to me, and I know that this is my contact. So there you go for it. For everything, silence. We've never experienced it. When I call the subways in New York, the buses in Eretz Yisrael, any place in the world, never experienced it. Because of a blizzard, I was stuck in Leningrad in the airport for 10 hours straight, waiting to get onto a plane to Riga. There must have been 1,000 people in that airport, at least 1,000 people. 10 hours. It didn't even sound. You were able to hear on the floors here they keep changing every so often, destination, planes, good planes, boarding times, the flapping up and down. You were able to hear that from the air. Nobody would understand. I imagine what would have happened in Canada. What would have happened? There most probably would have been somebody one corner with a guitar and some puzzles. There would be people standing at ticket counters demanding to get on to the next train. 1,000 people sitting in an airport 10 hours, hardly a word exchange. It's fear. They've been trained. This is it. You just don't talk. Things are just not loud. The feeling that I had after I entered was that I was entering one big, massive jail. In my mind, I nearly heard doors clanging shut on me as I entered. The very entrance to Russia is something that inspires fear. An airport, very dim, very dark. It's modern, it's new, but everything. Dark. All calculated to inspire fear. No guests. The people in the city, in Moscow, are not permitted into hotels. A
tourist is not permitted to stay overnight in anyone's home. No one is permitted more than 14 days in all of Russia, and no more than 7 nights in Moscow, all calculated to make sure that the tourist will basically see what they want him to see, and nothing more. And certainly, a great deal of effort is placed in making sure that the tourist does not come into contact with the people. I went to teach Torah, and I ended up learning a great deal. I must say, a feeling that pervaded me throughout the time I was in Russia was the feeling that I was absolutely humbled before those Jews. And I want to describe that. They're the story. They're the story. My experience is insignificant. I managed to feel humble before them. Arrived on Thursday, a message had already arrived in Eretz Yisrael before we left that we were invited to a particular home in Moscow for Friday night meeting. We called the particular home, were told to be at a particular station, Karam Rishon. Somebody was waiting for us, took us to this home. There began no less than a 7-hour odyssey. There were 30 people at the Shabbos table. It was Shabbos Hanukkah, 30 people at the table. Of the 30, 24, 25 were students, young boys, girls, their 20s, most of them already Balei Tshuva, others on the way. I don't know how to describe that evening. And I had it started. The davening, the most inspiring I've ever done. Davening in that room, and it was prohibited. Also, to have a meeting any place in Moscow except for the show place of the world, the great synagogue in Moscow. Who are the meeting Jews? Minyan was also, but here, a group of Balei Tshuva and a number of young people who were leading them, a couple of Shabbos. For a moment, I thought I was at an NCSY convention, but from the Vodok until the end of davening, every word was said, word by word, together. The davening must take 3/4 of an hour, every word together, to make sure that those who don't yet know how to read Hebrew well will be able to daven. Divrei Torah, he let us all know. He kept saying Divrei Torah, singing. For those who did not know Hebrew yet, everything was translated into Russian. A break every few minutes, translation into Russian. Following the meal, it was late at night, this whole group began to walk us back to our hotel through the streets of Moscow. I was terrified. They were walking the first and only time that I heard the noise in the streets of Moscow. They were singing, they were talking loudly, there were police on the street, they said, "Otam ha'vishayim, anachu lo mefachadim yet." I was quaking, and they were absolutely brave, absolutely brave. 19, 20-year-old kids, but they would walk us only to 1 o'clock before the evening, for the hotel. There, even they felt, any place where there are tourists is out of bounds to anybody else. But it was a 7-hour experience of Torah, of Yiddishkeit, in the warmest kind of atmosphere. I'm not going to describe the heart. I don't know if you've ever seen real abject poverty. This is it. The worst you can imagine, the worst you can imagine, is very close to what this apartment was like. That there was food for everybody. And when I talk about food for everybody, I'm not talking about a meal that we are accustomed to. But there is an atmosphere, an atmosphere in that decrepit apartment that is unmatched. I haven't seen it. And this is a home that I returned to a number of times, and forget about that home before the end.
Travis morning went to shore, spent a good part of the day shore, just happened to be that the master learned that this time of year there are only about 6, at most 7 hours of daylight. Sunrise was at about 10 to 10. Which means Shabbos didn't begin shore till 10:30, how they usually dealt with was immediately after Musaf, they got the mental and finished at 2 o'clock, felt like Rosh Hashanah. That was a very special experience, because in the shul there are only 2 generations you can see. Those over 70 and those in their teens and early 20s. Between the early 20s and the 70s is the soul. And that energy is the miracle of Soviet Jewish. Some of those older people, some of those people have developed the bravery to transmit before it's too late whatever they know to the younger generation. There is a Jew who sits in the Moscow synagogue every day. His name is Avraham Miller. Avraham in his youth was a Talmud of Ismail in Rabin, and he is the one who is responsible for the resurgence in secret of Torah in Moscow. He began to teach 1, 2, 5, 10. He's the one who has created cells, in a sense. That's what it is. There are cells all over Moscow and in a few of the other major cities. Cells with study of Torah takes place. Maybe the most unusual experience, and I may, if I say this a number two more times, forgive me. There were many unusual experiences. Mitzvah Shabbos. A number of the people who we contacted in advance told us, see us in front of the shul, Mitzvah Shabbos 7:30. I was unaware of this. We came to the shul 7:30, and just standing out on the street, 50, 60 young people. And I found out that we started 10 years ago. 10 years ago, they started, we call it a minute, a form of silent demonstration. Jews come every Saturday night without fail. 10 years of time, and just stand in the street. Just stand on the street. No more. Of course, when they saw people, they immediately knew to be guests. And I began to feel people saying about pieces of paper slipped into my hand. And before I knew that, they brought pieces of paper. This is the means by which they communicate. A very special request outside the world. Whoever wants to apply for Aliyah must receive a Havana invitation from somebody in Eretz Yisrael. And there's certain information that has to be written on that Havana. People just put pieces of paper, on those pieces of paper written, names, date of birth, year of birth, all of the information that would be necessary for a Havana. It was the thing I was most frightened about when leaving the country. I consider that one of the many nisim at customs on the way out. Unbelievable. Checking through everything in my suitcase, felt it, touched it, but didn't feel it. I left it in a jacket, in my shoulder jacket. It was in the, they felt every part of the jacket. It was in there. Why they didn't find it, I don't know. But Baruch Hashem, I put that. But the whole scene. Now, Dredin, one very fascinating thing. Jews in the Soviet Union, those who are activists, those who are studying Torah, have an absolute thirst for knowledge of the outside world, what's going on with Jewish communities throughout the world. Their knowledge of the Jewish world surpasses nearly anything I have ever seen. In the dark, on that street, a few meters away from the shore, somebody walks up to me and says, businessman in New York. Well, you're teaching Sifos Kuzer, you're in Kabul, and I'm with you in Milan. Direct quote. unknown.
I later ended up at this person's house, and he said, I have a picture I want to show you. It was an aerial photograph of Mary Sloane, that's my outline. He says, who would be interested in this? I don't know whether I was talking with the KGB. It was a Jew as many Jews there. Any visitor that comes, they question about everything going on in the Jewish world, and most specifically in the Torah world. Their knowledge is a level of sophistication that is unknown. I'm sure that 99% of the Bible God doesn't know that I teach them this book over here. But only 99% of the Bible God don't even know I exist. I tell you the truth, it doesn't upset me. But a Jew in the dark on a street in Moscow, and it's not because I was so important, but the fellow who came with me, he told him his whole life story. He knew precisely where he was from, and what he was doing, and what he was involved in. It's because there is such an unusual thirst for knowledge of everything going on in the church. That silent demonstration, and it's clear what the police know about it, the police check. They're aware of whoever comes there. Whoever comes there is already a marked person. And they are not. They come every week so they have to stand before. Sunday, the following day, I was taken someplace. There's no way in the world that I could ever retrace my steps and get back there. I was told that I was the first one to be brought there. Somebody met me at a, you know already, at a train stop. It was Hugo Zabatny. I did learn a little bit Russian. Karon Kishon, and then began an absolute odyssey. Back a few stops, crossing to another train, ahead a few stops, down to another train line, further, until I arrived.